Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for March 15th, 2020, here on the Pro Wrestling Torch Daily Cast Network. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are coming to you at a bit of a strange time in professional wrestling in the world, really, where we've crafted this show dating back to the days when Pat McNeil was hosting and I was his co-host every week. We've crafted this show, Wrestling Night in America, around talking about the big events in pro wrestling. And there was never any shortage of big events to talk about. If one had just happened, one was coming up around the corner. And with the establishment last year of AEW, with the Americanization of New Japan and all of these other companies taking a foothold in professional wrestling, it felt like there was sometimes too much to talk about. We didn't get a chance to get to everything we wanted to talk about each week here on Wrestling Night in America. Tonight's a little different. Tonight, it's going to be guided by you, the callers, and you, the emailers. So 515-605-9345, press 1 if you'd like to talk. WNIALivecast@gmail.com. If you'd like to send an email, we've got about four or five emails already sitting in there. And helping to guide us through this evening into the unknown a little bit is PWTorch.com contributor Joel Dinell. Joel, thank you for taking time out to join me tonight.
Yeah, Greg, you know, thanks for having me on. I guess I can say, you know, just doing the best that we all can, given the circumstances. And I'm glad that we're still able to podcast, talk a little bit about wrestling, even though there's so much uncertainty, you know, in the wrestling world and the world as a whole. But, you know, we're just going to sit tight here on this Sunday evening and, you know, try to have a good time talking about some wrestling.
Yeah, and I think that's probably where we'll start. You mentioned the uncertainty in a lot of what's going on in wrestling today, and the uncertainty begins and ends with WrestleMania because a lot of the other companies have made their changes. They have made, you know, Ring of Honor. We were going to talk about Ring of Honor tonight and their 18th anniversary show that was slated to take place on Friday. That has been postponed. Their wording in their press release was a potential rescheduling at some point, although obviously everything is still up in the air. It's, you know, we're seeing organizations suspend operations, but they can't really say when they're going to start back up again because we are in uncharted territory, and that's a term I used a lot when I joined Wade Keller on Thursday on the flagship and talked a lot about this and talked a lot about the news that was still breaking at the time as we were recording this show. So listen to that if you haven't. But Joel, WrestleMania, there's still been no official announcement. WWE has not come out and said, yes, we're still having it, or no, we're not. They've kind of just let things stand as they are right now. Everybody seems to be on to what WWE's game is, which is they want either the city of Tampa, Hillsborough County, or the state of Florida to be the one to cancel the event. That would make WWE look like the good guys. They could blame someone else for not holding their biggest event of the year. And there are also some logistical issues there if they do cancel. You know, do they do a show later in the summer that's WrestleMania? Do they do WrestleMania but have it somewhere like the Performance Center? So there's a lot of other logistical issues that come up if you cancel the show. But, Joel, as we're sitting here on Sunday, March 15th, do you see any opportunity, do you see any way that WrestleMania could possibly go on as scheduled?
I mean, definitely, I think it's very safe to say at this point that we're not going to see WrestleMania happening at Raymond James Stadium on April 5th, I believe, is when it's scheduled for right now. You know, it's all up in the air. I mean, we're learning things by the day. There's being new restrictions by the day. But I think that we'll probably have a much more clear picture, you know, where WrestleMania stands probably in this coming week. You know, it's always an option for them if they want to do it at the Performance Center, but you know, that it's so tricky. I mean, obviously, like you said, we're in uncharted territories, and do they want to have, you know, try and push out a WrestleMania right now and just have a watered down version at the Performance Center, or do they want to move it, you know, sometime this summer? I mean, the latest that I had seen from the CDC was that they were saying that they want to limit it to about 50 people in gatherings for about the next 8 weeks. So, I mean, if we are to have a WrestleMania, it's totally up in the air when they could have that in a stadium at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you talked a little bit about what of the alternatives that are out there, whether it's rescheduling it later in the summer, whether it's just canceling it altogether this year, whether it's holding it at an alternate location, whether it's Performance Center, whether it's, you know, somewhere else. In your mind, and I agree with you, I think there's no way, as we sit here March 15th, 2020 at 8:05 Eastern, I don't think there's any way WrestleMania goes on. And please, if you're just starting this podcast and you plan to listen to the rest some other time, these are kind of time sensitive these days, because by the time you listen to tomorrow afternoon, you know, things could have rapidly changed in one direction or another. So listen to this as early as you can. But, I mean, what do you think is the best alternative for the fans, for the company, of those that have been kind of floated out there already?
Well, I think it starts with listening to the health officials and seeing what is best for the talent and best for the crew. I mean, now that they're saying that to limiting it to about 50 people in a gathering, you know, how many people would it take to put on WrestleMania? Is that safe for their performers? Are they doing screening for their performers, their crew? And all these things start to come into question at this point. I think the thing that's difficult, though, is that we're watching all these shows, like, you know, we had Raw, which seems completely irrelevant by this point with everything that's happened, you know, and then we had the empty arena SmackDown that was held at the Performance Center. And it really all depends on, you know, are they going to continue to have these empty shows at the Performance Center? Can they continue on these storylines, you know, that they've been building towards WrestleMania, or are they just going to give those away on TV and then do a WrestleMania down the road? I mean, it's so difficult to say at this point, but I don't think it would be in WWE's best interest to do, you know, a WrestleMania in the Performance Center. I think that just would feel like such a downer on the product. I think that, you know, depending on what they do week to week, maybe you want to sprinkle some of these stories, you know, to happen in the week to week shows so that they get some sort of payoff. And then you can, whenever we get a clear picture of when WrestleMania might happen, then they can start to build, you know, another card for that. But it's a tough answer to give just because we don't know. Yeah. There's so much unknown at this point.
And that was going to be one of the questions I asked later, but I'll kind of circle to it right now, is, you know, if all of a sudden, let's say tomorrow morning, either WWE or Tampa or Hillsborough County or whomever steps forward and says, look, WrestleMania is not happening at Raymond James Stadium in April. It's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
What then happens to television? How drastically do you think that changes? Because we're in the middle of building WrestleMania. You know, it is WrestleMania season. WWE is putting their foot on the gas pedal, as they always do when it comes to building WrestleMania. It's not ho-hum build, here we go to Backlash. It's WrestleMania. So they've invested a lot of television time and a lot of effort into getting over these matches at WrestleMania. Do we just see a complete left turn and say, okay, let's put these feuds on ice. Let's revisit them when WrestleMania season comes around again, whenever we decide to have it. And let's just go in a completely different direction with TV in kind of a holding pattern. Or do you think it would be best if they said, okay, we're in the start to the Ed Orton build. We can't pay it off at WrestleMania this year, but let's make some big TVs between now and then. Let's do, you know, Edge versus Orton, maybe at the Performance Center again.
Yeah.
Let's do one of these big shows. And that's the downside of doing those WrestleMania-level matches on TV, is that TV is going to be at the Performance Center for the time being. So are you really going to run WrestleMania-level matches on TV at the Performance Center in front of no audience? So how do you think WWE traverses that?
Yeah, I think that for some of the feuds, especially of the returning talent like Edge, I don't think that would be beneficial just to throw his first return match in front of nobody at the Performance Center. So I think that there's some matches like that that they could, you know, at least put the brakes on promoting those for now And then hold them off too whenever WrestleMania does happen. But then, I'm not opposed to the idea of, you know, trying to build some of those TVs around some of the bigger matches. I mean, there's not going to be a whole lot going on in the wrestling world as long as this continues to go on for. I mean, you know, as far as I know, WWE is not going to have any other pay-per-views, you know, happening at this point. So I guess it would just be building kind of those TV shows. And, you know, it may even be beneficial for them too, is just to record a bunch of matches and then, you know, behind the scenes do some pre-taped interviews and different promos to promote some of those matches and just kind of make it a little bit more basic story building. You know, because I just can't see how you're going to have, you know, Edge returning in front of nobody, or, you know, the huge Brock Lesnar match returning in front of nobody. So some of those bigger things I would just put on hold for right now. But, yeah, take advantage of building some of those other things and, you know, give them more context, build promo packages for them, and you can build those on TV.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting decision creatively for WWE too. So there's just so many balls in the air right now. We mentioned WWE recording at the Performance Center on SmackDown Friday night. They'll be doing the same for Raw this week. They're probably taking it show to show at this point. I'm sure they're not going to announce a bunch of shows ahead of time at the Performance Center. There's no need, because it's not like they're trying to draw an audience there. But, you know, we look at AEW. They are taking place at Daly's Place in Jacksonville, with families and essential personnel, likely for the next few weeks. That's where they're going to be camped out. That's kind of, I know we've talked about holding shows at the Performance Center. SmackDown was the first show at the Performance Center in front of no audience this week. Joel, I know you're not a usual viewer of the main roster of WWE, but you did watch Raw. You did watch SmackDown this week. I wanted to get your thoughts on that episode of SmackDown at the Performance Center. And is it sustainable to tape that way? Let's say this goes on for another month and a half, 2 months. Is it a sustainable model to keep taping in front of no audience at the Performance Center? Do you think fans will just get used to watching it and the wrestlers will just get used to doing it? Or is it just not compelling enough television? Do they need to find a workaround to it?
Yeah, no, that's kind of the question on everyone's mind in the wrestling world. Friday's show at the Performance Center was a very eerie show to watch, with nobody in the crowd except for just essential ring crew production. You know, and so the show was a stripped down version of it. They played the Elimination Chamber match. The tag team match was also played on TV. But, you know, the most thing that's striking while watching it is that the promos that a lot of the wrestlers gave, it was just like they acted as if there were people in the audience. And I thought that just came off so weird on TV. I mean, there was a point where Sasha Banks and Bayley, they just had this weird promo where they went over to Triple H and Michael Cole before their match. And it was just totally bizarre, because they're acting as though there's people in the audience. And some of the sit down interviews too. I think that they could continue to do this, even though, you know, the fans are such a big part of wrestling. I mean, having the reactions to it is what, you know, makes the whole illusion of wrestling work. But as long as they continue to have, you know, commentary, if they change the shows so that they're not pretending as though they're playing to an audience that's not there, I think that there are ways to make it work. I didn't think that SmackDown show was a disaster by any means. I did not get that impression at all. I just thought it was weird. And I think that with some tweaks, you could continue to do this at least for a little bit. Now, I don't know what the rating was for this last SmackDown episode, and whether, you know, people being, you know, self-quarantining themselves into their homes, if that's going to mean, you know, an increase in the ratings, or if people are going to see that, you know, this is a less enjoyable version of wrestling, so they're just going to tune out of it. You know, I think that some of the audience is going to help to guide that as well. But, you know, they for some of these SmackDowns too, they could always just put together, you know, video packages of, you know, here's some of the best matches from this past year. You know, why can't they do some of that too, as well as, you know, tying some of those in with those pre-taped promos that I was saying, where they could just shoot something very simple, With some wrestlers, just continuing to build some of the storylines, you know, and then just record some matches in front of the Performance Center. There's so many different ways that they can go about this.
Yeah, the rating was up slightly, not enough to probably say, you know, wow, this is a bump from people staying at home, or wow, this is a bump from people intrigued about, you know, what a show would look like from an empty Performance Center. I don't really think it was enough to credit either one of those two things for it. But yeah, I think this is really an opportunity to use the Performance Center. And I think I may have talked about this on Thursday. I know I talked about it on Twitter. You can find me at Greg M. Parks. This is a real opportunity for WWE to change up how they do a show. And I think that was my main problem with SmackDown is SmackDown came across as the same show you would have gotten if it was in front of 10,000 fans. And when you're working in front of zero audience in a completely different setting, I think you want to use that opportunity to tweak things, to change things. I mean, you know, this is an opportunity for WWE to change up their format of how they do things, use the Performance Center as a character in the show that they can't do going from arena to arena every week. When every arena looks the same, you've got a different atmosphere in the Performance Center, not only the Performance Center itself, but the fact that you're filming in front of no audience. I mean, use that to your advantage if you're WWE. And maybe they just didn't have enough time to adjust this week. So I'm interested to see what we see on Raw and SmackDown this week to see if they've taken advantage of the location that they're shooting at.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that really struck me is that they're still playing it as though they're in an arena in front of thousands of people. And clearly the show was kind of thrown, a mishmash of things kind of thrown together at the last minute. I mean, especially when we had Triple H on commentary, you know, and he was not the most prepared for that job, but I thought that he did a fine job just filling in for that. To be completely honest, it was for a show that's so heavily scripted to have someone in there like Triple H who's, saying different kinds of things. He's not following all the rules. Just felt a little bit more real to have that in there. But yeah, I mean, this is the opportunity for WWE to switch up some of the things. Of course, we know that, everything stops with Vince McMahon and it's up to him how much he wants to change of it. But I think that there are so many options of how you can continue to tell some of these stories and tell different kinds of stories, given the circumstances.
For sure. Let's go to the emails, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Anything you want to email us, you can. We've got about 5 emails in the queue right now. If you're listening live and you want to hit us up, we'll get to it during this show. This is from Pranil, our weekly emailer, one of a couple people who emails us frequently. We appreciate that. And he wants to speak about Asuka. He says, I'd like to point out how great Asuka is doing with her character. She's getting me to despise her, and I'd rather not. I'm a huge fan of hers, and I'm chomping at the bit for her character to change so I can start rooting for her again. It doesn't matter if she is heel or babyface, just not this annoying person she is playing right now. I hope we can all agree that she is being utilized very poorly and could be something much more than what she is portraying. Case in point, her undefeated streak in NXT, where she was viewed as an unstoppable force. The fact that I would gladly see her lose to almost anybody on the roster right now is saying something. What do you think of her current character work? When do you think we'll see the end of this over-the-top annoying heel we see on TV? So that's from Pranil, who's a VIP member. Thank you, Pranil. I like what Asuka's doing. I think she's being annoying, like, on purpose. I think it's effective for her and Kairi Sane's characters. I think we've got to let go of Asuka's undefeated streak in NXT. It was really cool. But it was a moment in time, and it was a place in time that is not going to be replicated on the main roster. And, you know, Asuka is kind of – she's in that tag team right now. She's been portrayed pretty well, even in singles action. You know, it was her who Shayna Baszler had to go through to win the Elimination Chamber. But, you know, I think the days of Asuka being on top of the women's division with Charlotte there, with Becky Lynch there, with Shayna Baszler there – with the potential of Ronda Rousey coming back at some point and doing a program in the either near or distant future. And then, you know, you look at the women in NXT, if they get called up, you've got the Bianca Belairs, you've got a number of women in NXT whose push could eclipse that of Asuka's on the main roster were they to get called up. And I just think it's – I would like to see Asuka be utilized better just because she is so talented, but I think realistically she'll probably be used as a utility player going forward, someone who you can put in the title feuds here and there, but certainly not someone that WWE is prepared to build around.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. But I'm not a fan right now of Asuka's work, you know, of this over-the-top obnoxious. I think that's just something that people see, and they're like, you know what? I don't need to watch this. And they turn it off and change to something else. I think it's turning people away, especially when I saw it this week on Monday. It's just like, man, that's just – who wants to watch that right now?
Monday night was a little bit of nails on the chalkboard kind of heat, I think.
Yeah. But Asuka is so talented. I mean, there was so much promise. You know, like you said, people are hanging on to a lot of what she was in NXT and then comes up to WWE and, you know, is just not really seen as one of those top-level players like Becky Lynch, Charlotte, or Ronda Rousey, you know, comes back. And it's really unfortunate because of how talented she is. And you bring up a great point that there are so many talented women in NXT who are chomping at the bit, you know, to – be a top player on the main roster as well. So it's tough to see where Asuka really fits in here other than, you know, kind of being that utility player that like Natalia's at right now, where Natalia is so good, but she's never been seen as that top level player. And she's been kind of thrown into some of these, you know, weird storylines, but is always a good hand, as they say, you know, for someone that they can go back to. And that's kind of where I see Asuka's at in WWE at this point, where they don't view her as somebody to really invest a lot of time into, but they always see her as somebody that they can rely on and go back to.
One more email from Pranil before we go to the phones. He says, I finished watching Bound by Honor yesterday, and I'm currently in the middle of Gateway to Honor. Bound by Honor had PCO going up against Dragon Lee in a pretty forgettable match. PCO did not look good. It was cool seeing him moonsault and flip off the top rope the first time I ever saw him do it, but I'm questioning the risk-reward of it now. His whole in-ring act seems to be predicated on him flying off the top rope. He lost his footing almost every time he went up to the top turnbuckle. He fell once, and if it wasn't for Dragon Lee bracing him from falling another time, he would have fallen again. Sasha Banks also comes to mind as someone who tries doing things that she's not particularly adequate at. Nobody's perfect, but at least be competent before taking a chance hurting oneself or one's opponent in the ring. These spots might be awesome to some, but I don't like the feeling of being on edge whenever I see someone about to go down. I will never forget watching Psycho Sid jumping off the top rope and snapping the leg he landed on. I'm the guy that cringes when I see powerlift because I'm afraid they're about to see a horrific accident. How do you feel about wrestlers that aren't very athletic but do moves that in the back of your head know should not be doing? Does PCO have more to offer than those top rope spots? So that's, again, from Pranil. You know, PCO with his style, it was a matter of time before he was going to start breaking down, I think, and it sounds like in Pranil's opinion that time has started now. You know, it's hard because yes, I can cringe and yes, I could wish people didn't do things, but ultimately it's up to them. And ultimately it's up to the company to step forward and say, hey, you got to knock it off. And I know some people feel that about Big E's dive through the ropes. I think it's suicide dive. And people would wish that he would stop doing that because he comes close to landing on his head every time. But, you know, as a viewer, I can say, ugh, that makes me cringe, but you know, ultimately it's up to Big E. If he feels comfortable doing that, he's going to keep doing it. If WWE is comfortable that it's being done safely and in a manner that's not going to get Big E or his opponent hurt, then they're going to allow him to keep doing that. So at some point you've got to put the professional responsibility on the and the onus on the wrestlers and the company. There's really not much say I have in it. You know, I may be able to sit here and say I don't like it, and that's, I think, kind of what Pranil is saying. But other than that, you just hope that they make the right decisions for their own health, because you don't want to be taken out of a match because you're fearing for the safety of one or both of the wrestlers in the match.
Yeah, definitely. And that's where it comes back to the character work of these wrestlers, is that if you can really develop your character and make it something that the audience connects to, I mean, that kind of stuff can last forever. that can last your whole career. But if you're relying upon being, you know, a 52-year-old guy like DCO is, you know, in doing some of these athletic spots, I mean, that's only going to last for so long. And you know, at the same time, he's done a lot of work, you know, creating this kind of different kind of character. And I think that that's going to, you know, go a long ways for him, that he's been working on that. But yeah, I mean, it really is up to a lot of these wrestlers to know what they are capable of doing and what they can do safely, you know, and just using their best judgment. I mean, I can't tell, you know, what PCO should and shouldn't be doing, or telling Big E what he should and shouldn't be doing. It's really up to the wrestler.
All right, let's go to the phones for the first time tonight. The 478 area code kicking us off. It is Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, thank you for joining us. What's on your mind tonight?
How you guys doing tonight? Hope y'all all being safe.
Trying to. They've got me. They've got me in my home tonight doing this podcast. So for at least 90 minutes, I'm not a danger to society.
I understand that. Well, they already put me out for 2 weeks because I'm in the school system. So they put us out for 2 weeks. So that is what it is.
I'm,
it's really 3 weeks because spring break is right after the 2 weeks. So it's 3 weeks.
Oh, so you got me beat, Darrell, because our spring break was this week. And then we're off next week now. So we as of right now, we've only got spring break and then next week off. I'm guessing that if things don't change drastically, we're going to get some more time off. But they've only sidelined us for an extra week. So we'll have to see on that.
Yeah. And this going to tie into my first question for you guys. And knowing that now they are probably on Monday going to vote in that Corona relief package and get more tests and then make it so everybody can get the test for free and stuff like that. Give it a week or so. It depends on how things will change after you start getting that into circulation, especially now since later on in the week, the money start flowing into the CDC and stuff like that. So as in, y'all was speaking on WrestleMania earlier. I know that the governor was saying that he would stop it in Tampa and stuff like that. But I also see that WWE is looking for smaller venues in the state of Florida to put it up. Do you see them also thinking about moving it? Maybe even to a place like Miami, who's still welcoming people to come down and come down for spring break and do all the type of stuff that they have going on down that way. Do you see them moving the locations?
Well, you know, it's such a fluid situation. It's hard to say because you could plan to move it, and then all of a sudden, what happens if that area gets hit? You know, and then it's like, you know, do you try to move it again? So this is such a fast moving and ever changing situation. You can only really plan for a couple days ahead, I feel like, and so that's another aspect of this story that's so hard for WWE to decide, you know, what they do about WrestleMania if they do cancel it, is you can't plan ahead with this thing very long. You know, and the other thing is, let's say, you know, you can hold it in Miami. Let's say they're welcoming people. Well, people still have to make that decision. Am I going to risk sitting in an arena or wherever it's held for 6 or 7 hours around potentially hundreds or thousands of other people? So even though it's allowed, you may have people make the decision that it's not worth the risk to go to that event, and you would have a lot of empty seats. It might look a lot like the Performance Center. So, you know, Joel, I mean, what do you think about WWE trying to run it in a place that's maybe not been hit or not been hit as hard? You know, is there potential there, or is it still a pretty high risk?
I mean, they're going to evaluate all sorts of options here. But again, it does go back to what you said, Greg, that things are changing by the day. And so you just cannot plan for things that far in advance. I mean, right now, I think WWE knows, you know, realistically that WrestleMania is not going to happen as is. And I think that they are floating some different options out there. But I think that it would be a really bad look for them to still try and run this somewhere else in the short-term future. I mean, if the safe bet for them would just be to follow what you know, a lot of the other sports are doing. And right now, what's being reported about the NBA is that teams and owners are looking at what it would look like if they were to, you know, resume gameplay at the end of June. So, I mean, WWE could look at something, you know, that in that time period. But again, you're still, if you make plans to do that, things could change. All of a sudden they could say, nope, it's going to be much longer than that. So it's a very fluid situation, but I would not expect to see, you know, WrestleMania happen, you know, in a large arena or a small arena or anything like that, you know, anytime near that April 5th date. I think it's going to be much further than that.
Darrell, follow up or second question for us.
Yeah, just to follow up. I think that, or you can see about postponing it for a week or something like that, because probably going back to it later on, would it cost them more? And they're probably looking at cost and stuff like that, because you also got places like the UFC who still saying they're going to throw fights in with empty people, and they're looking for different venues to throw those fights in. And if I'm not mistaken, the NFL is – still haven't given up on doing the draft that's at the end of April, on the 23rd through the 25th. So it's only the NBA, baseball and soccer that I don't think was in that suspended thing. So, yeah, it depends. So it's all on up to them and what they thinking about doing. Now, I know you guys were speaking on the empty arena and stuff like that. Could it be if they – instead, if they want to give it a little feel, try to test certain people coming in. Since they have the money, they can buy the test, stuff like that. Or just get a bunch of the talent who haven't shown up on TV yet and put them and other personnel in the crowd to make a crowd. What you think about that in the performance center?
Yeah, testing people coming in, I don't know how quickly the turnaround is for when you test someone to – get the results back. So I think that would be worrisome there.
If someone's positive, you know, in the testing there, what is WWE, you know, prepared to do that? You know, that opens up a bunch more questions.
Yeah. And I think the more realistic scenario is putting, you know, trainees who are not on television, putting them in the audience. Now the risk with that is you end up having a, you know, WCW Disney taping situation where everybody looks like, you know, they're responding to the boos and the cheers that are lit up like a studio audience is supposed to, you know, rely on. And in 2020, I don't think that's a good look. There's no real good option. I mean, you could do the trainees, you could do the empty arena. There are probably other scenarios that I'm not even thinking of that you could do, but none of them are really good answers. There's no really good answer as to, or a best option, I don't think, for this, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, as it being, you know, something that's never happened before. This is all new stuff. And I'm curious to see, because AEW is still steadfast that they're going to, you know, have their next two shows at Daly's Place in Jacksonville. And their audience is going to comprise of family members and essential staff there. So it'll be interesting to see that if they do actually use those people as audience members and how that works out for them, because maybe that will be the way to go, depending on how that looks on TV, depending on, you know, if it, you know, if all that works out there. But yeah, I mean, it's a difficult situation.
Yeah. All right, Darrell, your final question or comment for us here tonight.
Okay. Yeah. And to follow up on that, cause you know, most of the places around like hospitals and government places, how they're testing people just before they can give them like a real test. They're using thermometers, to test and see if they have fevers. And if you have a fever, in majority of hospitals around the nation, if you have a fever, they don't even let you come in. They tell you to go home and isolate yourself. And that's how they've been doing majority of pre-early testing and stuff like that. So because if you have a fever, that's almost like a symptom of it, and they don't want you to come in and maybe get anybody else. Now, from this moment forward, since we don't know how long this can go, because eventually people going to have to go back to everyday life, because this is, again, this is a virus that is probably not going to be cured. It's just you get a vaccine for it, so you'll eventually catch it anyway. And right now they're just trying to do so they don't have a rush of people getting sick at one time going into the hospital. So potentially people are going to get sick anyway down the line. How long do you think, and we're just talking about WrestleMania, do you prolong other pay-per-views from this moment forward, knowing that this is something that's going to go on for probably a year and a half longer, because people are going to eventually get it anyway? How do you see that changing up things and stuff for people, especially smaller indie places that make their money off of shows, and especially now that they won't be able to make their biggest money shows of performing around WrestleMania and stuff like that?
Yeah.
How does that hurt those competition? And even guys like AEW, yes, they're back well, but they still making a lot of their money off of their tape shows that's going live every week, and they're trying on their pay-per-views because of how they're backing. So how did that affect them in this long coming? And does that hurt the industry as a whole and set them back?
I think it absolutely hurts the industry as a whole, and it's something that I brought up on Thursday with Wade Keller, that, you know, these indies and these wrestlers rely on WrestleMania weekend bookings and events to basically, for some of these companies, to prop up their entire rest of the year. I mean, that's how financially good, for lack of a better term, that these wrestlers and these companies do during WrestleMania weekend. If you take that away now, you've got wrestlers who are in dire straits financially. You've got independent companies who may have to scale way back on the number of shows they run for the rest of the year because they don't have the money from the WrestleMania weekend show to sustain them going forward. So it's definitely a problem for independent wrestling. And I think Darrell brings up another good point, Joel, that let's say you do WrestleMania at the end of June. Okay, well, you've got other shows and other pay-per-views already lined up throughout the rest of this calendar year. Do you just leave them as is and say, we're just going to plop WrestleMania down in the middle of all of them? Or, you know, do all of those get affected? And do the TVs get affected? And it's kind of a ripple effect, or has the potential to be a ripple effect, no matter what choice they make with where they end up doing WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, it's, we will see how it goes. I think that at this point they're going to continue on doing these empty arena shows at the Performance Center. And, you know, what happens to the other pay-per-views? I mean, obviously that's not WWE's top concern at this point, but, you know, they could continue to try and do these shows of Raw and SmackDown there, along with NXT. And then do you do these things on, you know, have these Sunday night specials? I mean, they're not all that special then, you know, if you're then asking for more people to all at once be at the arenas there, there's not such special storylines, or do you just kind of hold off on those? But then what impact does that have on the WWE network? Because now there's really not much of a draw in except for watching, you know, the old content. But as far as the independent promotions, I mean, this is what's happening now is going to be, you know, affecting these independent promotions, but it also is going to really affect small businesses all over the place. There's bigger companies, there's different government systems where they're able to kind of shut down at least for, you know, the next few weeks or the next month or two and be okay with that. But small businesses are really going to take the biggest hit from this. And all these independent promotions that you talk about are really going to be hit hard by not having that WrestleMania weekend. Now, they can always go back to promoting those shows again whenever WrestleMania is rescheduled, or, you know, if it still happens in a stadium capacity. But as far as wrestling as a whole, this is going to take a toll on the industry. It really is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Darrell, appreciate your call starting us out here on this Sunday night. Stay safe, and hopefully you have an opportunity to keep yourself occupied during this downtime.
Sure will, and y'all stay safe also.
Thank you, Darrell.
Thanks, Darrell.
You know,
really appreciate it.
Joel, I was just thinking about this. The one alternative we haven't talked about for WrestleMania is moving it to Saudi Arabia. How viable of an option is that, do you think?
Oh, my goodness. So that's funny because I saw, if you ever follow the Simpsons memes online, there was just a hilarious one of Homer in a boxing match, and then Mo comes to save him with the fan, and Mo's got the
one of my
Saudi
favorite
Arabia
episodes.
Label on him. Oh, my God. That was so funny. So Homer's got WrestleMania listed on him. The other boxer says coronavirus, and Mo comes to save him, and he's labeled Saudi Arabia. So
I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at it right now, and if you're a wrestling fan, I heartily endorse you to follow at Simpsons WWE. That is Simpsons Wrestling Memes, and they hit more often than they don't. So I would encourage you to follow
them.
So. I mean, it's something to bring up, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's I never thought we'd get to that point, you know, of wondering could Saudi Arabia come in there and offer some sweet deal? I mean, at this point, who knows? I don't want to definitively say anything about that, but you know, has WWE even gotten paid for the previous shows that they have had there? I don't know if they have yet, but definitely. I wouldn't put it past Vince McMahon to at least put some consideration in it if Saudi Arabia does step up to the table there. I think that it would be it's crazy how much WWE hasn't gotten flack from the mainstream media about their shows in Saudi Arabia, but I think that would be another PR nightmare for them if they were to try and get everybody on a plane over to Saudi Arabia in a giant arena there. And try to host that show there. I don't think it'd be a good idea, despite whatever price tag that they want to give them for it.
I'm going to go back to the emails here. One final one from Praneel tonight. He says, thank you for taking my email last week about how I'd like to see some thought put into Roman and Goldberg's match at WrestleMania. In that email, I said that it's about time Roman starts caring about winning over his naysayers, but I agree with what you said. He can't win everybody over, and he should focus on keeping his fans happy and on his side. One of my suggestions for the match was that Roman should pull off some new moves to quell the people that knock him for having a limited moveset. Then I got to thinking, why not do it for his fans? Why not give his supporters some ammunition for when they always back him up against his opposers? All I'm saying is, I doubt that anybody would stop him if he wanted to spend some time at the Performance Center working on his WrestleMania match with Goldberg. I'll even put some responsibility on Goldberg to do his part to get this guy, who is the current generation, the rub he needs. I say this all with the realization that it should be a short match given Goldberg's limitations, but make those minutes matter. I can care less about the tagline, spear versus spear, surprise us. And again, that's from Praneel. So the idea that Roman Reigns needs to freshen up his moveset or surprise us with something against Goldberg, do you buy that, or is Roman Reigns kind of factory made at this point, that he is who he is and we shouldn't go expecting changes?
I mean, it would be fun to see something, you know, different out of Roman Reigns. But, I mean, you look at the build that they've had to this match, it's just kind of, you know, there's nothing novel about the way that they've built this. I mean, it's just, you know, spear versus spear, which we've, you know, seen this kind of tagline before. And then Roman, you know, his biggest beef with Goldberg is that he's a part-timer. You know, that's the same retread storyline that we've been seeing, you know, ever since The Rock came back with, you know, against John Cena and then Brock Lesnar. You know, it's almost like it's the new heel authority in WWE, where it's the, you know, everyone is always upset at the person who's part-time, and they should be entitled to more things because they're there every week for the fans, for the people who follow them. And I think that's just kind of the same kind of story that Vince McMahon likes to tell. And I just don't see, you know, that they're going to bring really anything new to the table other than probably a very quick match and probably maybe some spears going back and forth, but that's going to be it. I mean, that's a Goldberg match at this point. where he was in his prime in WCW were these short couple-minute matches, and WWE tried to do something longer with him with The Undertaker, which turned out to be a complete flop. I think they're just going to go back to doing a quick match and get in, get out of there.
And I do want to make this point that, it's a little unfair, I think, to pick on Roman Reigns. He's an easy target. But there are a lot of people, when you get to Roman Reigns' position on the card, when you've been doing what he's been doing for as long as he has, you know, everybody gets pretty set in their ways when it comes to their moveset. You don't see a lot of veteran wrestlers just breaking out random new moves here and there. Now, you see it every once in a while, Kevin Owens with the stunner and things like that. But there are people who are content to, and it works to their advantage in some ways, for the fans to know their moves. You know, the fans know that he's going to hit the Superman punch. The fans know that he's going to hit the spear. The fans know that he's going to hit those clotheslines in the corner, and it allows them to ebb and flow along with the match by knowing what's coming. So I think there are some advantages to the fans knowing what's coming. There are obvious advantages to having or adding to your repertoire every now and then, not that you have to break a move out every match, but, you know, here and there trying something new. But, you know, Roman Reigns is not the he's not the only one who does this. You know, he's not the exception by any means. There are a lot of wrestlers who are in the same boat as him.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's just part of being a wrestler, is that you have your spots that people know, and, you know, you lead up to those different spots in the match, and, you know, that's how you get over in the ring. But where Roman Reigns needs a lot of work is just his character. I mean, his character is so blah. We saw him in doing that sit-down interview on SmackDown here in front of a crowd of nobody, and this guy is still, there's just not a whole lot there. And you look at him, and you feel like this guy should be a star, but it's just, there's not a connection there. And there hasn't been a whole lot, you know, in that way of changing him. And I don't think it's a matter of changing up his moves in the ring. I mean, there's guys who have gotten over doing, you know, less kind of spots. I mean, think of The Rock's People's Elbow. But it's because of his character and the way that he's able to connect with the audience that, you know, people buy those kinds of things. And I think that just at this point with Roman and how long he's been pushed for, that it's, you know, he is who he is. And I don't think a whole lot of that's going to change.
Yeah, unfortunately, because I think it would be cool to see him add to his repertoire. Greg Parks and Joel Donnell here with you on Wrestling Night America, PWTorchDailyCast.com. We are here every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, taking your phone calls and emails about the big events in pro wrestling. And, of course, when there's a pay-per-view, we go on the air right after that show goes off the air, talking about that pay-per-view and covering it in full. So we'll go back to the phones here, the 814 area code. Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, joins us. Ryan, thank you for calling in. What's the first of your three-pack tonight?
Okay, my first question is on a YouTube video Stevie Richards did about Vince McMahon in WrestleMania. I guess Steve Richards' theory on Vince McMahon is he doesn't believe the coronavirus is very serious or doesn't even believe in it at all, and that's why he's not canceling WrestleMania or SmackDown from last week. So do you think that's true, that Vince doesn't believe in the hype of the coronavirus?
He strikes me as someone who probably doesn't really, but he probably thinks all this is hubbub and hogwash and, you know, all old timey, phrases that he might say. But, you know, he's the guy, I remember, who has told others on the writing team that there is no sick. That was the famous quote that Vince Russo, you know, Vince Russo was in this creative meeting, and he was white. He was feverish. He had, and Vince asked him, "What the hell's wrong with you?" And Russo says he's sick, and with a straight face, Vince McMahon responds, "There is no sick." So, for a guy who doesn't even believe in sickness, for a guy who doesn't like it when people sneeze around him, it's totally within the realm of possibility, Joel, that Vince McMahon does not believe that this. And there are people out there. I mean, you scroll on Twitter for an example. There are people who believe that, you know, if this isn't a hoax itself, that it's being blown way out of proportion. So Vince McMahon strikes me as one of those people who probably believes that.
Unfortunately, so yes. I guess I forgot about a lot of those kind of weird quirks with Vince McMahon. And I don't know exactly what Stevie Richards said, but you make a great point, Greg, that, it's within the realm of possibility based upon things that Vince has said and done in the past. And that's just kind of the danger with this whole thing that's going on right now, is that there is so much misinformation, people believing that, it's a political scheme, it's a hoax and different stuff like that. And unfortunately, because of a lot of that misinformation out there, has led to these drastic measures being taken of things being shut down, people quarantining themselves where, it had people believed that this was a serious threat from the beginning, it's possible that we wouldn't be in the same position that we are now. But unfortunately, yeah. Vince McMahon, he does strike me as somebody who would not believe that this is all a very serious thing. Even though age, this is something that's serious for him too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And just to kind of put a bow on this conversation, I still think the more likely scenario is that it's a game of chicken with Tampa, and Vince doesn't want to cancel it because he doesn't want to look weak. And, this has been his MO all along throughout his entire career. He's going to wait for someone. And I've said from the beginning, WrestleMania is not going to get canceled unless the government tells him to cancel it. Vince is not going to cancel it on his own. And it looks like they're waiting for that. And I wouldn't be surprised if this week Tampa says, nope, you're not doing it. And then Vince and WWE can cry, hey, that's not fair, or personal responsibility, or it's their fault, or whatever the rallying cry will be for their fans who've now had WrestleMania taken away from them. So I think that's the more likely of the scenario, but the theory posited by Stevie Richards and relayed here by Ryan would not surprise me either. Ryan, point number two tonight.
Okay, second questions on these shows that are taking place in front of no audience. Could you see Vince McMahon maybe doing a show from the Firefly Funhouse, much like Matt Hardy did, like a show from his hometown with Impact a couple of years ago to help the ratings and make the show a little bit more exciting?
I mean, I could see that, I guess. It would take a big creative leap by WWE that I'm not sure that they're willing to or capable of doing these days. Unfortunately, and this is kind of what I talked about earlier in the show when I talked about, hey, this is WWE's opportunity to really change up the format of their television, change up what they do. At the time, TNA had nothing to lose. They had nothing to lose going to and letting Matt Hardy kind of run Impact from the Hardy compound. I think WWE's a little more, as much as they would hate to admit it, WWE's a little more buttoned down when it comes to things like that. And, we do it in an arena. This is how we've always done it. This is sports entertainment. That other stuff is something else. And you could kind of hear that in Michael Cole's presentation when they did do the woke-in character of Matt Hardy, and they finished Raw with a segment from the Hardy compound. And Cole was basically – I'm sure with Vince in his ear, basically told to verbally roll his eyes at the whole thing. So it would be a stretch. I think it would at least be different. I don't know how good it would be just because the Fiend's character has taken a hit, I think, in the last few months, especially with the decision to move from Roman Reigns versus the Fiend for the title at WrestleMania to Roman Reigns versus Goldberg for the title. But it would be something different. And in this time, Joel, something different is good. So I don't know if the difference being doing it at the Firefly Funhouse, I don't know. There's probably other potential options that creative people that are not me could think of, but that's just one thing that would be a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, before all this happened, I mean, that you would think that was kind of a out there kind of bizarre idea, but Ryan, that's not a bad idea at this point, because they need to have different, fresh kind of content, because it is going to seem stale being in front of nobody at the Performance Center. And so they do have the opportunity to start doing different things. And I mean, honestly, I wouldn't mind the idea of, try and pay off the John Cena, Bray Wyatt thing by doing something like that, thinking outside of the box where you can kind of pay off that storyline, as something on TV, and then work towards something different towards whenever WrestleMania does happen down the line. I don't think that's a bad idea at this point.
And Ryan, your third question or comment for us.
Okay. Third question is, last night, I didn't get into the show, but supposedly in West Virginia, they had a wrestler that was from Wuhan, China, debut, I guess, doing like a coronavirus gimmick. I'm also seeing like these toilet paper on a pole matches coming up on my Facebook feed also. Do you see that they'll be doing like any type of coronavirus type gimmick in their programming, or think they'll steer away from that?
I think that's saved for the indies. You know, whenever you think the indies can't go any lower than they do, then they do. So, you know, that's just how they, a lot of these companies survive, by getting word out there, by trying to go viral. And, you know, in this era, they're going to take anything controversial out there in the mainstream and try to own it and try to get themselves over with it. And it does not surprise me in the least to know that there is an indie promotion in West Virginia that's playing off the coronavirus. So, Joel, I just don't see WWE going that direction. I think WWE largely wants to be an escape for their fans, to not have to think about this and not have to worry about it. So I don't think it would be wise for them to do it, nor do I think they will.
Yeah, I don't see them at all doing it, just because you watched last night and they talk about, you know, the circumstances of not having fans there and how fans are so important to the show, but you never heard them say coronavirus or COVID-19 at any point during the show. So I just can't see them do anything like that. But you bring up a great point too, Greg, that I was reading something about how, you know, the independents now are built around a lot of, you know, hardcore and gimmick wrestling, because before, what was mainstream was just what WWE was giving you. And then a lot of indies were kind of this high athletic style of wrestling that now we're getting on NXT and AEW. And so that just kind of leaves the spot for the independents to try and generate buzz by, you know, doing things like that, basing upon the coronavirus, you know, whether it's good or bad, you know, they're going to need to find their niche to get people to gather into, you know, high school gyms or, you know, old concert venues or whatever it may be.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Ryan, thank you for the call this week, and I look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Ryan.
Sure thing. As Ryan drops off, our phone lines are empty, 515-605-9345. We've got about two more emails to get through, so we will sign off when we have no more callers and no more emails. So if you'd like to get on, 515-605-9345, press 1 to show up in the queue. Joel, our next email is from Tim, who is a VIP member from Virginia Beach. He says, good evening, Greg. I was listening to your discussion on last week's Thursday flagship, and I couldn't agree more with the point that you made regarding WWE creative, where there is a glaring lack of consistency in terms of the wrestlers' motivations from week to week. While AEW certainly deserves criticism in some aspects, for me, their biggest strength and the one thing that sets Dynamite apart, particularly from Raw and SmackDown, is that they are much better at long-term storytelling. As you mentioned, while the narrative direction of their top performers isn't especially complex, their consistent presentation gives the audience a much easier through line to which we as viewers can attach ourselves and thus feel a deeper sense of connection and satisfaction no matter the outcome. My question for you has to do with the documentary I just watched on the network regarding FCW. While I enjoyed hearing wrestlers like Big E and Seth Rollins talk about their experiences as trainees, after watching the entire piece, I came away feeling troubled by the overall tone, which to me seemed more designed as a way to put over the Performance Center more than anything. This led me to wonder whether the Performance Center might actually be doing more harm than good, in the sense that FCW is more of an organic proving ground, a place that could easily weed out those who are less committed and less passionate about the business, building a new facility seemingly designed to take anyone and mold them in Vince's image. To me, this has only served to make all of the wrestlers feel more like manufactured products, when there's clearly something to be said for that old-school grassroots approach, where the cream naturally rises to the top, and every performer comes away feeling like a more confident and higher-skilled version of their natural self. I would really love to hear your thoughts on this. Thoughts and prayers to all the listeners during these stressful times. Stay safe, and thank you for all the great content. Tim, a VIP member from Virginia Beach, thank you for the email, Tim. I think this has been an issue going back since probably even to FCW, Joel, where fans were afraid that they would be taking wrestlers, especially those with no experience, you know, the football players who would come in, the amateur wrestlers, you know, nowadays the ones from, you know, the, what is the, talent competition there that they do the
tough enough.
Oh, it'll come to me. But you know, they take all these people with no wrestling background and they build them up, basically, you know, as a American Ninja Warrior. That's what I was thinking of. I knew it was going to come to me. But they basically build these people from the ground up and don't give them the opportunity to really, you know, and Japan does this really well. They'll send wrestlers on excursions to America or to Mexico to see a different style and experience wrestling a different style, whereas you don't have that in WWE. You're taught a certain way, and that's the way you're going to do it. And, you know, you get the indie guys who are broken down, and sometimes it's really sad to watch them in NXT even, as talented as you can see they still are, but now they've been harnessed and they've been WWE-ized with that style. The positive of this is if that's what the style is going to be on the main roster, then by all means break Ricochet down and teach him to be a little more WWE style while keeping what makes him unique so that he can be successful on the main roster. Otherwise, you're going to take Ricochet as he is, put him on the main roster, or he may never get there because that's not what the writers and what Vince McMahon are looking for on the main roster. So, yes, there are a lot of negatives, and I think the one positive, though, is they're being taught a style that is predominant on the main roster. So if you want this wrestler to be successful and you want them to be, you know, viewed by as many people as possible, make as much money as possible, be as over as possible on the main roster, then yeah, they have to do this certain style.
And the downside to that too is that you've seen guys like Ricochet who go through the NXT Performance Center and they do learn the WWE way, and then when they get to the main roster, it didn't make any difference. You know, the Vince still sees wrestlers the way that he's going to see them. And I think that's one of the distinct advantages that AEW has, is that they're not trying to control other wrestlers. They're not trying to say this is the AEW style. They just want the best wrestlers and then just bring the skills that you have. And, you know, then that is going to create, you know, this very diverse, flavorful kind of product where there's all sorts of different styles that are happening. Whereas in WWE, yes, they're bringing in different indie guys. They're bringing in former athletes and stuff to learn the WWE style. But at the end of the day, it's what Vince McMahon thinks of you. And if you fit his mold, then sure, you're going to be shot to the top on the main roster, regardless of your experience or how well you even do the things that you've learned from NXT. I mean, you see people who aren't ready for that spot. I mean, think of like Lacey Evans was pushed into a top spot and, you know, not someone who wasn't a former wrestler, an independent wrestler or anything like that. And as long as they fit the mold that he's looking for, they're always going to get a shot there. And so that's kind of the downfall is that, I think that there's a lot of positive things that come from the Performance Center, but all that really matters is how Vince McMahon sees you.
Yeah, and that's the ultimate downside of everything in WWE is the whims of a 74-year-old man or however old he is nowadays takes precedence over everything. I mean, you could be broken down and wrestle the perfect style in NXT and learn the WWE style, but if you're too short or if you're too fat or if you don't match Vince McMahon's vision, you'll be brought up and you'll be turned into No Way Jose or something like that. So that's always the risk. Yeah, for sure. Not to say that there's no value in No Way Jose's. I mean, companies need undercard guys to fill things out. So, you know, you could have that job for 10 years and be considered successful. You know, it's just a different level. And if you're a fan, you probably want more for that person is all. Darrell, who is still on the line, sent us a tweet to add on. He says, one more thing with us heading into a recession, and even though they want us to give each other space, but they also want us to still support small everyday businesses, can the governor, I assume the governor of Florida, knowing this could hurt the economy for what is a recession on the rise also? So I'm assuming he's asking about the potential cancellation of WrestleMania. And this is another thing that I brought up with Wade on Thursday is, Florida seems to have been a little more hesitant, the government, both the state and locally, in making a hard cutoff and saying, no, we're not going to do this. They've kind of said, please don't do this. And one has to wonder if the fact that WrestleMania pumps millions of dollars into the Florida and Tampa economy has something to do with this, you know? So that could be something else. It could be, you know, Tampa hoping that WrestleMania cancels it, but also kind of waiting till the last minute and hopes a miracle happens or things blow over so they're not out those millions of dollars of local economy.
I think that's also – that's a big part of it too, is because there is so much money that's on the line here. I mean, think about it. America and everything is being put on hold. You know, we're for at least the next few weeks, could be the next couple months. We don't know how long that's going to be. And so with these kinds of events, there is so much money that's on the line. You know, eventually Disney World, also in Florida, made the decision on their own to cease operations for the indefinite future. But, you know, they're another big corporation that the state of Florida is having to deal with. That's gonna, you know, a lot of money is gonna be lost there. And I think in comparison to Walt Disney World and what they bring in versus what WrestleMania brings in, there's probably a lot more consistency from Disney and those theme parks that are bringing in money versus WrestleMania. So I think that the money is obviously a big part of it, but also I think they're a smaller slice of the pie, WrestleMania that is, compared to everything else that's going on.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to our final email here tonight. It is from Bruce Lee, PhD, VIP member from Seattle. And if you're not a VIP member, by the way, there's no better time to go VIP when you've got all of this time to look back in the archives of the Torch dating back, oh gosh, almost 30 years. More than 30 years now, I believe. So with all this time on our hands, do a little reading of some of the back issues, some of the great work, some of the audio content from yesteryear of PW Torch. PWTorchVIPinfo.com is where you can go to be a VIP member, just like everybody who's emailed me tonight, just like most of our callers are every week, PWTorchVIPinfo.com. So Bruce says, good evening, Greg and Joel. I hope you and your families are well and safe. Zach Haydorn's recent show was on his top 10 comfort matches. What would be your top 3 to 5 each? I tend to favor longer matches in this scenario, so a number of Rumble matches from 92 to 08 are probably in there, and maybe some recent ones, as well as Okada, Omega, Banks, Bayley, Iron Woman match, the first Elimination Chamber, Hart Michaels, and Hart Austin. Looking forward to the discussion. Stay safe. Thank you, Bruce, and you do the same. Joel, I've never really thought about comfort matches. There's, the idea that – and I get the idea, but I've never – I don't know. I guess the Rumbles, I've done Rumble rewatches every year, so I guess there's some comfort in that. So probably really any Rumble match from the earliest through maybe 2000 or so. I have made it a point more recently to watch, when I do my Rumble rewatches, to watch more recent ones, the mid-2000s, that era, mid to late 2000s, since I know I've only seen those shows once. I think my comfort matches would be more comfort shows. So I think, like, you know, the Royal Rumble matches for sure, certain Survivor Series matches from back in the day. I think any old-timey wrestling challenge or wrestling superstars taping, really, you know, the idea of, you know, it comes from comfort food, which is, what is comfort food? It's food that you had when you were a kid that brings back that memories of comfort and being at home and being safe. And so if we're to do that with comfort matches or comfort shows, I think they would be the ones that I watched during my childhood. So, you know, those types of episodes, the squash matches, the things like that from the early 90s, WCW Saturday Night, those kind of episodes, those are my comfort shows, I think, where it's not as frenetic. It's a little more laid back because you have the squash matches and it's not as kind of in your face with everything going on.
Yeah, I mean, that was what came to my mind, too, was just, you know, watching stuff from, you know, when you started watching wrestling. I started watching wrestling, you know, summer of 2005, so it was kind of the build of the Shawn Michaels Hulk Hogan SummerSlam, you know, leading into the Rey Mysterio going for the World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania 22. So that was kind of my introduction into wrestling. And so that's kind of the stuff that I look for comfort, but also too, you know, because we're not allowed to go to, you know, large public settings, you know, some of the shows that you went to as a fan, You know, some of the shows that pay-per-views that I went to of WWE. I mean, even some of the AEW stuff recently, or independents, anything that you went to live and had a good experience at, you should definitely check out. But another thing you talked about too, Greg, as far as checking out PWTorch.com, is that you used to have a really fun show, Gonzo and the Greg, you know, going through different top fives, all sorts of different topics. And, you know, I hope to see, you know, some more updated versions of that while there's a lot of lack of news going on, you know, because those are kind of things that we'll start talking about, you know, top fives, or looking back at different, you know, big stories and whatnot, or your different favorite memories in wrestling. So I think that's going to generate a lot of content going forward, too.
Yeah, thank you for the plug. And Gonzo and the Greg was an audio show I had for about 2 years with some friends of mine. We just did a sort of a reunion show when I was up in New York visiting family over winter break and over the holidays. So you can find that in the archives, pwtorchvipinfo.com, if you are a VIP member. Had a lot of fun doing it. As you said, top five list every week. We'd also have a little bit of a gimmick there where we would talk about more current events and things like that. A lot of arguments, a lot of disagreements, but a lot of fun as well. I hope it's fun for you to listen to if you choose to go back in the archives, Gonzo and the Greg. I don't know if I need to give a date. We're probably talking 2009, 2010. No. It would have to be 2011, 12.
Later than that, yeah.
So because I remember going back, and I thought that we had started it like in 2009 or 2010, but I think it wasn't until like 2011 or 12 that I started it, because I think we ended it in the spring of 2013. So, yeah, and it was every week on the Torch. And so if you are a fan of my audio content today, or if you're a new VIP member and a fan of what I do here, whether it's in the written form or the audio form, do go ahead and look back at Gonzo and the Greg and tweet me at Greg M. Parks that you're listening, maybe for the first time, maybe listening again. So I really appreciate that, and appreciate everybody who goes VIP here at pwtorch.com. Joel, we have reached the end of the emails. We've reached the end of the phone calls. Go ahead and plug where fans can find you on social media.
Yeah, so fans can find me on Twitter at Joel Dehnel. That's J-O-E-L-D-E-H-N-E-L. And most of my tweets are about wrestling, some about news and sports and different stuff like that, but always tweeting about AEW.
Excellent. Well, Joel, appreciate you joining me tonight, and we'll have you on again maybe when the mood isn't so somber.
Of course, yeah, and if the mood is still somber, I will still be around here. So anytime, Greg.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, Joel. And don't forget, we will be back here. Who knows what we're going to talk about a week from now? The term plans change is kind of a frequently thrown around phrase when we talk about WWE booking, but never has the term plans change meant so much on such a grand scale as it does in the wrestling world today. So thank you for listening. As always, 8 p.m. Eastern next Sunday, pwtorchdailycast.com. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and I'll talk to you then, because if it's Sunday, it's wrestling night in America.